Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agriculture industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report for the 12th day of March 2015. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. And then we'll take a look at the cash grain market, too, that with Matt Bennett from Bennett Consulting and Channel Seeds out of Windsor, Illinois. Along the way, we'll check in on the agricultural news with your Director of Ag Programming, Dave Dickey, and discuss the weather forecast, too, right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Let's check the numbers now as they settled up in Chicago for this Thursday afternoon. Futures are like this for the day. March corn at 382 and a quarter. A penny and three quarters lower for the day. The May at 388 and a half, down 2 1/2. And July at 395 and three quarters, 2 3/4 lower. December at 411 and three quarters, 2 1/2 lower. And the March corn of next year at $4.20 and a half, down 2 3/4 for the day. Soy complex bean futures at this hour trading in Chicago are not available to us, but we'll get back to those in a moment. Live cattle futures finished the nearby April contract at 155.85. They were 25 cents higher. June at 146.67 and a half, or down 25. Lean hogs for the day at 62.47 and a half, $1.65 lower in the April, and the May at 72.20, down $1.12 and a half. In the feeder cattle, in the March contract, 214.85, 25 cents higher, but April at 213.20. They're up a dime for the afternoon. Again, checking the numbers from the outside markets at this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 220 points at 17,858. And the gold futures at 1,151 are about a dollar higher for the day. The dollar index at 99.375. That's a 0.410 higher on the afternoon. Of course, you can listen to all of our ag programming if you'd like on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. There, in fact, starting today, you'll find some of our ag programming from the All-Day Ag Outlook. Chris Hurt in the livestock sector has been posted there. We'll catch up with some more of those as we make our way through today, tomorrow, and over the weekend, all at willag.org.
Support for WILL Agriculture comes from Murray Wise Associates, LLC, providing nationwide land auctions, farmland sales and management, and financial advice for agribusiness. Information on upcoming land auctions and offerings can be found at murraywiseassociates.com.
Now let's check some of the rest of the numbers in Chicago. Soy complex now, March beans at 986 and a half, 2 1/2 lower. The May at 990 and a half, down 2 1/4. And July futures there at 994, 3 cents lower. August soybeans 991 and three quarters, down 3 1/2. And next year's November at 967 and a half, down 4 cents for the day. Bean meal at 340, 350, down 220. And bean oil at 3076, 21 lower. Chicago soft red winter wheat lead option March at 513 and a quarter, up 10 and a quarter. July, the harvest month, at 509 and a half, up 7 3/4. And Kansas City hard red in the July, or the harvest month, at $5.50 and a half, up 5 3/4. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area today. Mostly sunny, high of 59 degrees. Tonight, 20% chance of rain. That'll come after 4 a.m. in the morning. Mostly cloudy, a low of 41. And then tomorrow, rain likely after 7 in the morning. Cloudy at a high of 56. Winds will be calm out of the east at 6 miles an hour tomorrow. Chance of rainfall set at 70% for the area tomorrow. Friday night, a 50% chance of rain at a low of 44. Saturday, cloudy, and then gradually becoming mostly sunny and a high of 55 degrees. And Saturday night, clear with a low of 35. Sunday, sunny skies in 56. Monday, mostly sunny in 64. Tuesday, sunny in 47. And Wednesday of next week, sunny skies and a high near 49 degrees. We'll take a more complete look at the weather forecast when we get to the bottom of this half hour. Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be here. He's filling in for Mike Tenure, who is away from the office today.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
Let's turn our attention directly to the marketplace now on this Thursday afternoon. Dan Zwicker at CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, joins us. First things first, thanks for coming to the All Day Ag Outlook on Tuesday of this week. It was a really good day. I hope you really enjoyed yourself.
I did. I always enjoy visiting with old friends. Been in the business a long time, and the Beef House is one of those events that you get a chance to renew a lot of old acquaintances and visit and tell a bunch of lies that you told last year.
Well, we'll be able to hear some of those, I suppose, later on. I am going to pull a portion of the corn panel, the very first portion where I ask each of you to do the bullish and bearish versions of what might happen in the marketplace and use that for Commodity Week. So it'll air on our radio station tomorrow and should be up on the website pretty soon, too. It will be on the website in its entirety, not in the Commodity Week program, by the way, but just on the website itself, along with everything else. And you'll not only get to hear Dan, but you can watch him if you want, because we posted some video there. That'll happen later in the week. But maybe we should talk now about your expectations as we go forward, because we have the prospective plantings report due out, that at the end of the month, the grain stocks reports there as well. And then there are some interesting things that are happening with bird flu. We'll hear more about that from Dave Dickey and an update from Missouri later in this program. I don't think it'll have a lot of an impact, but everything seems to trade in Chicago. What did you see today?
Well, I think today's weakness was generally triggered by a weaker than expected set of weekly export sales numbers for corn and soybeans. Now, the wheat number came in at the high end of trade ranges, and that provided some underlying support to the wheat market. And then the technicals started kicking in wheat shot higher, and then that was enough spillover strength then to come over and pull corn and soybeans off their early session lows after the trade got to look at those weekly export sales numbers.
And as you look forward, do you feel as confident today about the corn market, maybe as you did on Tuesday at the All Day Ag Outlook? And I know you were talking much longer term, so maybe you could compress that into, I don't know, a 3 or 6 month horizon to begin with.
Well, I mean, corn has a lot of headwind against it. I mean, it's clear from the crowd that we saw that the crowd probably owns a little more corn than they would like to have be owning at this time of year. So we do have farmer ownership that's eventually going to have to be peeled into the marketplace, and we'll have a lot of hedge pressure when that does come into the marketplace, whether it comes in yet this month or if it waits until June. But I think when you look at balance sheets and you look at the prospect that we could lose 1 to 2 million acres of corn, and as I pointed out on the panel, the odds of having a sharp decline in yield after you have a big spike like we had last year are reasonably high. And that would say that, you know, it would not be surprising to see a corn yield maybe down in the 160 or 162 or 3. I know the USDA and all the trendline guys are wanting to use something in the 165 and 167, but when you look at years in 94 and in 04, yields dropped anywhere from 8 to 18%, and that would at least tee up the chances that we would have a more reasonable yield. Even 160 bushel would be the second highest on record. So I think that can change the balance sheet in a hurry, and I think that argues for the corn market to at least have a few tense moments over the next 60 days, and then we'll kind of go from there. Like I mentioned, yes, I am bullish longer term based upon some of my cycles, but also know that nothing works exactly the way you expect it to work at times. And there is downside price vulnerability in this corn market if everything would go perfect. If we get in early, we get it planted, we get some good rains, Chicago will be talking about another record crop, and that'll be a very, very strong headwind to get any kind of rally going. So producers do need to look at pricing opportunities if they're given to them between now and the March 31st report, or maybe into early April, if we do get some worries over planting delays in the South. The South is going to get a good rain over the next 4 to 5 days, so we're going to continue to see planting delays in the Southern Corn Belt and Belda, and that might spark up a little strength in the market. I thought the way wheat is performing, a lot of your technical buyers all went long at the close yesterday on wheat. It flashed a buy signal, and you can see that they got ahead of the market here today. If wheat can show some follow through next week, then I think that could pull corn with it and maybe pull corn into some buy stops sitting on top of the market, and maybe give everybody a shot at, selling a 15 or 20 cent type rally, which at this point in time would probably be an opportunity.
What are some good reasons for wheat to continue to move higher?
Well, if you go down to Southern Illinois, you probably have a hard time finding 10 fields. Wheat acres, soft red winter wheat acres, are hard to find. World balance sheet, actually, on wheat is much better than any of the other commodities. It's a much tighter situation, therefore it is going to be more sensitive to weather problems around the world, probably much more than corn and soybeans. So from a fundamental point of view, that's what I would probably argue is the world balance sheet is relatively skinny when you look at what corn and soybeans could be at the end of the year.
All right. Hey, thanks so much. And we appreciate you being at the All Day Ag Outlook and being with us each and every Thursday here on the Closing Market Report.
Very well.
That's Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, and joins us on this Thursday edition of the CMR. Up next, we'll hear from Dave Dickey. He's your Director of Agricultural Programming and has today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the Advanced Biofuels Association says it will begin a campaign asking Congress to revamp renewable fuel standard policies. Among the legislative changes, removing a loophole that allows refineries to get a waiver from purchasing advanced biofuels and calling for more certainty in the law that blending mandates will continue. The move is significant because the biofuels industry has been united in opposing legislative changes to fuel mandates, fearing opponents who would like to end the requirements. The Des Moines Water Works Board of Trustees has voted to sue 10 rural drainage districts in and around the Des Moines and Raccoon Rivers for elevated nitrate levels that have forced the Water Works Department to increasingly filter drinking water supplies. The lawsuit could affect the way farmers manage fertilizer in the affected counties. The board announced in a news release the lawsuit will allege those districts violated the Clean Water Act. Bill Stowe, Chief Executive Officer and General Manager for the Water Board, says in a statement that agriculture must be accountable for the impacts of its production. The Iowa Soybean Association, which is involved in numerous watershed-level efforts to reduce nutrients runoff, said in a news release yesterday that the lawsuit will not help reduce nutrient runoff. USDA officials confirmed yesterday that H5N2 bird flu was found in a turkey flock in Arkansas. Arkansas is the nation's third largest broiler state, behind only Georgia and Alabama. Arkansas has more than $645 million in poultry exports, far higher than exports of any other state. A turkey flock of about 40,000 birds in Boone County, Arkansas, initially tested positive March 10th for bird flu and was confirmed yesterday. The flock had been showing signs of increased mortality, so samples went to test labs in Arkansas and Ames, Iowa. Import countries have been quick to ban all poultry imports from states with positive cases of H5N2. More than 30 individual countries and the entire European Union banned poultry imports from Minnesota last week following the positive finding in a commercial turkey flock. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You'll find us online at willag.org. There today, we posted the first in a whole series of agricultural programming from the All-Day Ag Outlook held over at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana. More to come tomorrow and then over the weekend, too. Both audio and video, find it at willag.org, the All-Day Ag Outlook posted to our website. While you're there, click on WillAg Calendar, and you'll find some upcoming events, including one next Monday evening that starts at 6:30, Farm Credit Illinois building there in Mahomet. That's off Prairie View Road. John Newton, ag economist from the U of I, will kick us off at 6:30. We'll follow that up with a panel of analysts, including Merrill Crowley, Bill Gentry, and Dwayne Nelson. Free and open to everyone. This one sponsored by Farm Credit Illinois and the Champaign County Marketing Club at the Farm Credit Illinois building at 6:30 next Monday evening. And then on the 31st of March, we'll be in Sherman, Illinois with a panel discussion as well. More on that as we get a bit closer, but should be a great event there too. That's a prospective plantings and the Grain Stocks Report Day. A fantastic couple of events coming up. You can find them all in our Will Ag calendar. Let's turn our attention now more fully to bird flu, a story that Dave Dickey told you about in the Ag News just a few minutes ago. It's in Missouri, too. Turkey farms in Asbury and Fortuna have been quarantined after the H5N2 strain of avian influenza was found. Jeff Furman, University of Missouri Extension poultry specialist, says this is a high pathogenicity strain, but it's not something humans have ever gotten. Furman says the human risk is quite low, but everyone always wants to be careful. The Missouri Department of Agriculture has quarantined two farms, and remaining turkeys will be euthanized and not enter the food supply. The two farms had more than 50,000 turkeys, but Furman says this shouldn't affect the state's poultry industry.
In terms of the economic impact for the state, it'll be minimal if it's contained right away. The number of birds on those farms, while they seem significant as a percentage of the total poultry industry in the state, it's really quite minor.
University of Missouri Extension's Furman says most likely wild birds, such as ducks or geese, brought the disease into the state. He says the biggest risk is to birds that are outside. He advises people with outdoor chickens to put them inside for a few days and keep an eye out for wild birds in the area. This is the closing market report. It is a Thursday afternoon, the 12th day of March. Let's check the cash grain market and how movement is pursuing across the United States. Matt Bennett of Bennett Consulting Channel Seeds is with us. He is in Minnesota this afternoon. Matt, thanks for being with us and taking some time out of your busy travel schedule. I know you've been working a lot. Where are you headed to this afternoon yet?
Well, I've got a producer meeting for Channel this evening. It's what they call their Channel Achievement Series. Basically, they bring in a lot of the producers that they're, about everyone that they deal with is invited to go to these things. And, you know, they just have different topics, and marketing has been one of the more popular topics, you know, here in the last year or two. So we've been able to do several of these things. So it'll be a pretty interesting evening.
So you've been at this with them for about 6-7 months now. Have you refined your message across the United States to some ideas that tend to really resonate with farmers, and what might those be?
Well, I think the main thing that we've been trying to do is get a good handle and you know, try to learn just as much everywhere that we're going, you know. And so there's always something to learn everywhere we go, whether it's with basis or, you know, what kind of a crops they're expecting or what they're going to plant. And so, you know, I just try to use that to the best of my abilities. And then we talk quite a bit about the direction that we think the markets are going to go. Of course, weather assuming, and depending on what kind of a rally we get, whatever the acreage implications may be according to those. So I feel like it just gets stronger every time we go to a new region, to be honest with you.
Which region and basis surprised you most on your travels?
You know, I didn't actually go there, but whenever I was in Commodity Classic, I was with some producers from Virginia who recently had a ethanol plant come into their area, and they already had a lot of course poultry feeders out there, and their basis was running for this fall 50 over the D's. So, you know, I was really surprised by that. They can't raise quite as good a corn as what we can, but they can raise some pretty good corn out there.
All right. And so we probably should explain for some of our listeners who don't follow agricultural programming that basis is the difference between the local cash price and what the futures price is that we talk about on the air. And in this case, December, which is the harvest month, right? So their basis was, and basis usually is under in the Midwest because that's where a lot of corn is. Depending on how much is being used. Our part of the world in Illinois tends to be not as far under, for instance, as Iowa and Minnesota, but that's because we have some really big users like ADM Indicator, which has a large ethanol plant and uses a lot of corn for other reasons as well. So that's what's happening across the Midwest. Now, bring us back to what your thought process is as we move forward, how many acres you think will be put forward in the survey by farmers, and if this will be accurate based on that survey time period, because we've begun to change the ratio in Chicago as it relates to corn and soybeans?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that whenever we look at the acreage mix, as far as this goes, of course, survey-based, I still feel like guys are probably going to be a little bit surprised. There is going to be some areas where I think they're going to back off of corn a little bit more than other areas. I do think, you know, I was in Iowa last week, and one of the seed guys that I talked to, you know, he basically indicated to me they're looking at a 3-5% drop for them with the particular company I was talking to on corn sales statewide, but they were picking up quite a bit on soybeans. So that led him to believe, of course, you know, that there's going to be a few less acres in Iowa, and that percentage there is a pretty big deal. So, you know, I'm still probably in that 87.5-88 camp, and I'm probably that's with a normal spring, not a perfect spring, but you know, some problems here and there. And then on soybeans, I think it's going to be a fairly big number. I mean, I still don't see us getting under maybe 85.5-86. So it'll be very interesting to see what the estimates are going into the report. But I do think that there'll be a few estimates that come in under the outlook form as far as soybeans go.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us. Safe travels, and we'll be glad to have you back in the state of Illinois soon.
Yep, thanks, Todd.
That's Matt Bennett. He is with Channel Seeds and Bennett Consulting out of Windsor, Illinois. Back in just 2 minutes.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
It's National Baked Scallops Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1841, Orlando Jones of Middlesex, England, received a U.S. patent for a process to make starch from rice or corn. Previously, rice would be steeped in water for several weeks to separate the starch by fermentation, though with limited yield. The patent described a process to extract starch from rice, which shortened the production time, increased the yield, and left byproducts in a condition suitable for further uses. In 1929, Asa Griggs Candler died. In 1887, Candler, a wholesale druggist, purchased the formula for Coca-Cola for $2,300. Candler then spent $50,000 a year on advertising, an unheard-of amount at the turn of the century. He eventually sold the company in 1919 for $25 million. In 1831, Clement Studebaker founded a firm that one time was the world's largest producer of horse-drawn vehicles, the Studebaker Brothers Manufacturing Company in South Bend, Indiana. The company motto, always give more than you promise. In 1930, Mahatma Gandhi began his march to the coastal village of Dandi to protest the British salt monopoly. And in 1993, Christian Kent Nelson died. He was the inventor of the Eskimo pie. And that's this day in agricultural history.
We thank everyone who attended the 26th Annual All-Day Ag Outlook Meeting on March 10th, and we thank these participating businesses for their support. Pioneer Seed, Risk Management Commodities, Standard Grain, Stuart Peterson, Farm Credit Illinois, ProSoil, and Global Commodities Analytics and Consulting.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. We're joined now by Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City with an update of the weather forecast. Drew, it appears there will be quite a bit of rainfall maybe coming through the heart of the Midwest. Can you tell me more about it?
Rain totals with this event, which will actually continue into Saturday morning, will run anywhere from around 6/10 of an inch upwards to nearly an inch and 3/4. The area from Missouri into parts of Ohio will be wettest. I think Michigan will probably miss most of the precipitation, and so will northwestern Illinois. But everybody else in that region is going to see precipitation at one time or another. There's a slight chance for a little wet snow in northern Ohio as the storm system exits out of the region. And if you're traveling into the northeastern corner of the U.S. over this next couple of days, be aware that this weekend there will likely be another snow event for parts of the New England states. And that's all part of the same storm system that will be passing through our region over these next day, the next 2 days. Now, we are still in the midst of a warming trend, and we will continue to see that dominating a big part of this central and eastern United States. Even though we've got this rain event kind of getting in the way a little bit, we will probably still experience a warmer bias across many areas as we move out through these next few days. The afternoon temperatures yesterday were in the 70s across hard red winter wheat country. They will be there again today and again tomorrow, perhaps even on Saturday and Sunday with Sunday. Maybe some extremes out there over 80 degrees in Nebraska and parts of South Dakota. This is only mid-March, and that's not a good sign. We are going to see some of that warmth work its way into the Midwest, but it's not going to be nearly as significant because of two reasons. One, we've got the cloudiness and the rain coming up with this event coming through the Midwest in the next 2 days. And secondly, there'll be a cool front that will drop through the Midwest as we get towards the early part of next week, and it'll bring another opportunity for a little bit of precipitation, but more importantly, it'll abbreviate the warm-up. So high temperatures in the Midwest here over the next day or so probably run mostly in the 40s and 50s. There will be some 60-degree readings still occurring in the southwestern parts of the Corn Belt and parts of Kansas and Missouri in particular, and we may see a couple of temperatures over 60 near the Ohio River and point southward, but because of the rain, you won't notice it quite so well. A little bit later, after the storm system abates from the Midwest, we will see more sunshine and warmer weather will likely occur at that point. We'll likely see a lot of highs in the 50s and 60s across the region, and perhaps we'll even see a couple of extremes over 70 degrees in Missouri and maybe part of southwestern Illinois. That will occur probably on Monday or Tuesday of next week, just before the colder air comes back. Temperatures are advertised to be quite a bit colder late next week. Be careful about buying into that quite so soon. I think the models are a little carried away with how cold it might get towards the end of next week. So we'll just sit back and wait a little bit and see how that comes together. No changes in South America today, and the biggest concern in the U.S. is about the dryness in the plains in the upper Midwest.
All right, Drew. Hey, thanks so much for the update of the growing regions around the Midwest, the nation, and the planet. Drew Lerner, of course, is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.